podcast slurp. Oh God, that's horrible. That was my tea, by the way. That's Barry swallowing. Sorry. That's Barry spitting. Come on.
Fucking hellfire.
Come on,
Baz. I'm not even set out yet. This is disgusting.
Sorry. I'm in one of them moods.
And I don't care mood.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah, that's it. So Massive Wagons podcast.
Here we are. Episode 42.
Episode 42. Same age as you, eh? 42, yeah.
Amazing. No. Yeah, we may have made it this far without being thrown off the air. Russell Brand, eh? Not Russell Brand.
Oh God.
Russell
we won't tackle them subjects.
That's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, Russell Brand. Russell Grant.
Russell Grant. He was the little fucking
the astrology guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, astrology guy, that's right. Yeah. Russell Grant, Christ, there's a throwback to
what
the
was
80s.
What did he do? Like, was he
was on TV. I remember when I was a kid, he was like a latter-day Mystic Meg. But like, it was much more of a thing back in the day.
Was it like GMTV? Was
yeah,
it
or TVAM stuff, for all yeah. the older people. He was on there right. and he'd go, let's go over to Russell and check the stuff. Ooh!
But he's going to talk a bunch of absolute nonsense for 2 minutes.
Virgo is entering Sagittarius.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, that kind of stuff, yeah. Or the other way around, I don't know. It sounds painful.
Lucky Virgo.
But I don't see anything of him anymore. I think he probably has like a horoscope in the newspaper or something.
Is he not dead?
Russell Grant?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I'd have heard about it.
I don't know why.
I say I'd have heard
about it. That'd have been front page news, wouldn't it?
In the Mills household, it would have been, yeah.
Didn't see that coming, did you, Russell?
No, anyway, nicely segued off Russell Brand there. Well done.
Yeah, I know, yeah, not bad that, yeah.
He's been chucked off YouTube, I think. Anyway, we won't go into that. Anyway, that's
would have been a very naughty boy.
Very naughty boy! Oh dear.
Anyway, we're going to talk about less serious things. Less serious things.
Well, less serious to some people, but very important to us, I think.
Yeah, we're going to talk about just guitars, really. You know, we don't really spend much time talking about the...
Tools of the trade.
Tools of the trade.
Yeah. Just, and to be honest, they're probably... If you really sit and think about it, they're probably as iconic, if not more iconic, than like... The people that use them, aren't they? You know, and some guitars play as big a part in the world of rock and guitar music as the artists, I think.
That's true, yeah. I guess we were talking about this anyway, naturally, because Bernie Marsden of Alaska and Whitesnake fame, he passed away a few weeks ago, and obviously prior to his passing, Stephen is a huge Bernie Marsden fan, isn't he? He's like massive.
He's got live on stage, if you didn't know, he plays the Bernie signature head, doesn't he? That white snake skin.
He does,
Marshall head.
Yeah, he plays like a...
Bloody thing.
It's like a... oh, God. It's not a JMP. No, it's a plexi.
Ah, right,
and,
yeah.
It's an absolute mammoth of a thing. But he's a huge fan, and he let us know a few months ago that Bernie was selling his guitar collection, including... Yeah. The Beast.
The Beast.
Which was, you know, his iconic Les Paul. You know what?
Is it 58, I think?
Is it a 58?
I think it's a 58. 59. Is it 58 or 59? What, £1 million for it, didn't he?
I think it's fair enough, to be honest.
Yeah, you know. Bloody hell. Would I be able to play it if I bought it for £1 million? Does that mean, would I be able to make it sound good? It wouldn't sound good if I played it. Honestly.
In this day and age, I don't think £1 million is a lot. Obviously, it's a lot of money.
All right, money bucks.
You know what? For something like that, it's truly one of a kind. Yeah. You know, it's not like a fancy car where made a bunch of them or anything like that. You know, even if it was
a one-off car or a run of two or three Ferraris or something, it's the heritage with that instrument and its individuality is
exactly staggering.
There is nothing like it. It's a true one-off, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it's been photographed in so many. Situations. It's not been locked in a cupboard, you know, for all this time. It's like it's been out there around the world, God knows how many times.
Yeah.
How many stages, written these songs on it, you know.
And they're interesting. I find it dead interesting. Like when Bernie died, I was sort of was going on YouTube looking looking at videos of Bernie playing and like try to find, you know, what the fuss was with the beast and find videos of him playing it. And I found a video when he's talking about when he got it and how he got it and who played it and who played what song in it at what backstage show.
Yeah.
And that just because of that guitar, you get in this half an hour of story after story after story. I'm like, this is dead interesting, you know. So Gary Moore turned up and he was like, what's this fucking thing? And he played this on it. And then Rory Gallagher picked it up at another show with him once and played something else on it, and it's like, wow, you know, they all but in each other's hands, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he used to live with Gary Moore, didn't he? I remember we met. This isn't an episode about Bernie Marsden, but while we're on the subject,
he's earned one.
He's earned one because he's a bloody he was a legend, and he was the loveliest man you'll ever meet.
Oh, he was.
He turned up at a show where we played with Lynyrd Skynyrd a few years ago, that little southern band. And we're at the NEC in Birmingham, and he was just kicking around backstage, wasn't he, Bernie?
Funny little story, right? After our set, he didn't come to see us, by the way. He came to watch Lynyrd Skynyrd because he's a friend of Ricky Medlock.
Yeah.
And he turned up with the notion that they were going to maybe ask him on stage to play a song. Because he was like, because after our set, I came out and I was stood side of stage watching Skynyrd, and Bernie's there. And I went over to him and introduced myself, and he's like, oh, you know, and all this, and we stood with each other watching Skynyrd, which was amazing. There's three chairs at the side of the stage for the Honkettes.
Oh, the backing singers.
The backing singers of Skynyrd, right? And there's three seats there, and Bernie sits on one, and the stage manager of Skynyrd came down and absolutely tore a strip off Bernie for sitting on them seats. Give him an absolute bollocking. And in true British fashion, you know, Bernie just stood up and just, he come over to me laughing his head off. He went, bloody hell, he's angry, isn't he? That's fucking gone up his nose. Yeah. I was only sitting down. That's what I mean. Totally laughed it off. I was like, funny, man. It's funny watching this. I was like, this guy clearly doesn't know who Bernie Marsden is.
No.
Just didn't care. Just give him a bollocking. Yeah. Just
American road crew are generally pretty overzealous with that sort of thing.
So funny. But, and it leads us to say he stood there all night. They didn't ask him on stage, but which was equally as funny.
Didn't want to be showing up, did he?
No, fucking didn't, no.
But he I was talking to him before or after the gig or whatever, but he was, you know, he was in the dressing room at one point, and
he did get an address,
he was just
he?
Talking to
no
him.
No bigger than this room, was it?
No, it wasn't. This was a broom cupboard. In a bloody arena as well, you know. We're a broom cupboard band.
Yeah.
And he's talking to us, and he's like, he's telling this story about Gary Moore because he lived with him apparently in London back in the 70s, and it was a time when he was doing stuff with, I think, UFO. So he's talking about Phil Mogg this and Pete Way that, and Gary Moore at the time's playing with Thin Lizzy.
Because we're interested, we're listening, and it's just sparking him on it. He's going, boo, boo, boo.
And he's just talking about this, and it's like, holy shit, you know, I had this moment like. Remember every moment of this.
You're not hearing a story off your dad, are you?
Yeah,
are you?
No,
you're hearing
no.
it from the horse's mouth.
The guy who was there.
Is like, wow.
And that was truly like, and he's like, once it got going, he obviously loved talking about it, but he had a way with telling stories and words and. Yeah. It was just a really,
got
really
a great voice.
And then he does have a great voice.
Then he's going on about Bonamassa, isn't he? And just come back from calling him Joe and Gary. And
Yeah,
just been over with Joe in America for the last few months and this, that, and the other. Recorded an album, some stuff with him. And fucking hell, you know, right.
Yeah, well, those that know, Bernie Marsden might not be up there, you know, with the kind of, you know, in terms of like common legendary players, you know, sort of
celebrity.
You're Eddie Van Halen, you're Richie Blackmore's, you know, the sort of real kind of massive personalities. But the people who are genuinely kind of like, well, currently I reckon the best in the world at it, like your Joe Bonamassa's, Richie Kotzen and all that kind of stuff, you know, they know, you know, he's like their favourite.
He's a player's player, isn't he? He's a player's player, isn't he, Bernie Marsden? You probably ask a lot of those big names, and they'd probably tell you Bernie Marsden was a man. Well, look at Kirk Hammett buying Greeny.
Exactly.
That's a prime example, isn't it? Kirk Hammett, one of the biggest guitar players in the world. And fair play to him, he plays that. What's that? That guitar's called Greeny, isn't it? They call it Greeny, don't they? That has a name.
He bought the
Les Paul.
Yeah, the Les Paul. Yeah,
Matey Boy's Les Paul, didn't he? And they called the guitar Greeny, I think.
Yeah, the Greeny.
That's right. Yeah,
it was
Peter Green
via Gary Moore. And then when Gary Moore passed, I think his family like sold it. So
bloody hell, eh?
But I, back to the subject. Sorry, guitars. You know, there's something in the wood. Do you know what I mean? I maybe it's a bit hippie kind of, you know, way of thinking about it, but it's kind of like that history is so unique to this piece of, you know.
And it's almost like they can't tell you, they can't speak, but it's there, isn't it? And it's the wonder. It's like you pick up a guitar and you think, where's this thing been? Especially like a guitar from like the 60s or 70s, because it's been around that long. And its sole purpose is to entertain people and be played. It makes me think, where's this guitar been? Who's played it? Yeah. What's been played on it? All these dings and bashes and stuff. It's like they've got a story to tell, but a lot of them can't tell the story, can they? And it's great when you read about a guitar that's got a history that's been documented. It's like, where they've been and who's played them is amazing. What's your if you could own, what's your favorite? God. What's your favorite guitar then? Your favorite guitar, kind of. You know, celebrity guitar. You know what I mean?
Big artist guitar.
What's your favourite? If you would hold one at the top by any of your favourite artists, I've got an idea. We one of a couple probably.
Yeah, you know what? I'm weirdly for a guitar player. I'm not obsessed over that. You know, obviously no. I'm interested, but you know, Stephen could tell you every single detail about. All of his sort of idols, guitars and all that. I was much more about the kind of the techniques and the play, like the way, you know, the sort of the way they play. But yeah, I know I'm not going to surprise anyone or you anyway. But yeah, probably Alex Lifeson's 335.
Yeah, I never thought of
that. The big semi hollow white one.
That, yeah, of course, right. Yeah,
that he had through the 70s. Well, he's always had it, but that's kind of the iconic period of that guitar.
I never thought that. No. I forgot all about bloody Alex Larson.
Oh, really? How could you?
How could I, eh? You'll give me 5 more minutes and I thought I'd have come up with that.
Blackmore had he smashed a bunch of them up.
Yeah, I would have said Blackmore.
But Blackmore had a white strap in the... It's the guitar he's using during the Live in Munich footage. One of the guitars he uses during that. He's like just beautiful. And he had like these big... scalloped kind of fretboard that it's so scalloped and the frets themselves are so chunky and thick. You look at the guitar and it looks visibly kind of different,
right?
You know, because of these like modifications that you'd have made.
That's when they chop the. That's when the scallop the frets are like that, isn't it?
The fret, so you can sort of push harder on the strings, and you've got a bit more distance to travel before your fingers sort of hitting the wood.
Right.
And it's kind of like it changes the way it feels. It's almost like your fingers never really touch the fret itself, and you have to be very light and quick.
Yeah.
But it's kind of more musical, really.
That was Blackmore, wasn't it? All that sort of the fuck he used to do. I don't know. I didn't know whether he was actually doing anything or he was just waving his hands around.
A lot of it's bollocks. Like, all right. But he's an unhinged genius.
I love him.
He's like Blackmore's. Well, I could talk about Richard Blackmore all day.
All
but, you know.
the purse lips.
He always does this thing where he sort of like lifts the guitar up for a second, as if to sort of like, just give his shoulders a break for
before we go at it.
A microsecond. I love Richard Blackmore.
He's a fucking legend. He's a one-off, isn't he?
Absolute rock star personified, isn't he?
Completely, yeah.
Other guitars, Michael Schenker, you know, back in the day, Flying V's massive influence. But I can't really.
I would. The other one I would have thought was probably Luke Morley's White Les Paul.
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah. You know what? I was
quite an iconic guitar, isn't it?
Working my way into the future, but is. Lefty.
It was a White Les Paul. Is that the one? It's the one he's playing at that famous. Well, it's probably not famous, but it's
Donington.
The Donington video.
Yeah.
That's great. If you've never seen that, check that out. Thunderline at Donington. They open up the main stage, don't they?
I touched that guitar actually. He had it on tour.
Well, did he? Did he have that one?
Yeah, he had it. I don't think he plays it very often because they weigh an absolute ton.
And yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not good for your back, like doing it on tour. But what's the tech? What's his tech called? Back in the Hard Rock Hell.
Bloody hell, young lad.
Yeah, youngish lad. Phil.
Phil.
when he wasn't looking, I just like...
You got that?
I touched the guitar, you know what. And I nearly touched Francis Rossi's guitar as well. But they were watching, too much like a hawk, you know what I mean?
I want to touch it.
So I couldn't get, I couldn't quite get to his green lacquered telly. So I couldn't get to Francis Rossi's guitar, but I touched Luke Morley's guitar anyway.
I think when you get to a point as a guitar player, when you've got, I mean, well, to be honest, when your guitar is as big a personality as you, is a hell of a testament to the guitar player, isn't it, really, you know? Well, I'll let you say about Rossi there, Rick Parfitt's guitar, that white Telecaster.
Yeah, well, you know what, I always felt like, this is kind of why I like playing that
guitar. Well, yours guitar looks like it's from the fucking 60s,
from
doesn't
the
it?
60s, oh, yeah. It's only 10 years old.
You've ironically sort of got your own kind of...
Hyper-aged it.
Iconic guitar there. Yeah, but you don't play much else, do you, really?
I don't ever think of myself anywhere near, like, in the league of these people.
I do.
I'm an icon. I don't think like that. But that is how it happens, though, isn't it? I'm sure when they bought these guitars, you know, when they bought these Les Pauls in the 70s or whatever, you know, they were only 10... 15 years old then, you know.
I love that a lot of these guys they've got these iconic guitars and they have had them forever. Like Rossi's, was it Rossi's? Well, I think I've heard the story of both of them, really. They sort of bought them from a shop back in the day. Oh, I got this in 1967 and it was brown. Then I painted it white and I tried to make it look more modern and I didn't like it. And then I painted it green. I think that was Rossi's or something like that. It's like brilliant. And so, it's so cool that they've kept them, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Kept them for so long.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You find the right guitar. Well, that's another thing, isn't it? They say, I mean, I can't really speak because I don't play guitar very well, but it must be great to be a guitar player. I'd love to be a great enough guitar player to pick a guitar up and feel the difference and go, right. Because I remember going to a guitar shopping with you once and we went to Promenade Music and you were looking at getting a new guitar or something. We picked up that white, you'd been eyeing up that white Les Paul that had been in there for a long time, custom, and it was like, it'd been in there for about 2 years. And it was like, I don't know what much money it was. At the time, it was a lot. I don't know what they'd go for now. It was about $2,000, I think. Probably go for a lot more than that now. It was like, right, let's go and have a look at it. Got it and played it. And you played it and I remember you going, do you know what? Feeling it. Don't really like. And I was like, devastated. I thought, no, we've been eyeing this. Keep coming in here. Look, it was like flipping Wayne's World with that white strap.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
And then you got that other Les Paul, the brown one, I think. Yeah,
that was awful.
Which turned out to be...
You just know. I mean, to be honest, I probably didn't know what I was on about back then.
Well, I don't know. If it didn't just quite feel right, your first impressions.
They're totally different. Les Pauls, especially the customs, are like, they're just such a lump of wood. Yeah. They're like unrelenting, this weight, you know, and it. That's, you know, you either get on with it or you don't. I get on with that much more now.
Yeah.
I attack the guitar a lot more than I used to, and I think you kind of have to be. You can't be a sort of delicate, you know.
I feel like you're Clapton type. Wrestling it.
Exactly.
Getting
you've
the best
got,
out
you've
of
got to be, and players like Gary Moore, like Bernie Marsden, he was big sausage fingers, you know. He wasn't messing around, you know.
Well, you look at Randy Rhoads. He's a prime example. Exactly. He's a tiny guy, and he played a big old white Les Paul. But whenever you see him, he's like.
I love watching him
he's
play.
He's like sweating and grimacing. And
it's like his whole body is playing the guitar.
Exactly.
It's like Malcolm Young, isn't it?
It's not this business, is it? It's like giving it the works.
I love it. I absolutely love watching guitar players who look like they mean it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what does it for me. And you know, they might not be the best players, but they're the ones that, for me, are entertaining to watch. I'll take that any day of the week.
Oh, Gary Moore was king of the face bullers, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well,
bloody hell. He's fucking Alan Carrymore, yeah, what a legend.
But it's always surprising how many people, like, in the blues world, slate him, don't get it, you know.
Well,
and to me, it's like, that's as good as the blues gets, really, you know, and I'm probably going to get crucified for suggesting that. But give me that any day of the week over Clapton, you know.
Yeah.
Which I can appreciate, but it just doesn't. It just doesn't excite me. It's not exciting.
It's not,
you know,
it's not exciting, is it? No, I know what you mean. I was never overly struck with Jimi Hendrix, to be honest.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not really a Jimi Hendrix fan. More of I know the two can't be compared, and I know they were. I know Stevie Ray Vaughan was a big fan of Jimi Hendrix, wasn't he? But give me Stevie Ray Vaughan over most of them as well.
I'd
it's
agree.
The same reason you watch him, and it's like blood, sweat, and tears, isn't it? You know,
unbelievable. Well, I mean, I think Hendrix, you know, he was doing this in a time when.
Oh yeah, yeah, I get that.
It totally. Was very much of the time.
Totally get that. Yeah.
But yeah, I'd agree. When you're listening to that, I remember that. Like listening to that as a teenager, and you're sort of setting your standards by what you already know.
Yeah.
And then you listen to Hendrix, and it's like it's a bit quieter. It's very loose, and sort of the drums aren't booming.
Yeah.
And then you just got to be ready to get it. Do you know what I mean? And back in the day, I kind of do now. I kind of get Hendrix now. But yeah, in all honesty, I didn't get it. I didn't get it back then.
No, I didn't really float my boat, to be honest.
Whereas you hear Stevie Ray Vaughan the first time, and it's like ripping, and it's like, oh my god, that's amazing, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what age you go to. Somebody like Stevie Ray Vaughan, it's like, wowee,
he is
incredible. Playing in some of them outfits he plays in as well.
Hats that
big
like,
hats like this. Yeah. It just there's a video of him. He comes on stage with smoking a pipe, doesn't he?
But it's like a
big huge white pipe, and he's got like a fox over his shoulders, like a dead fox thing, and they're like claret pants tucked into some like boots, and they like stick out like that, and he just looks absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then he's like shredding.
You play and sing like that though. It doesn't matter.
Well, is it Scuttlebutt? Is it
Scuttlebutt?
Oh my god, what a song! Is that really fast one he plays? Isn't it? My god, what a fucking tune that is!
Is it this one?
Oh, here we go.
Might as well feature a guitar in the in the video.
It's a nice guitar.
It is a nice guitar. Thanks, Ben. Need a pick.
Oh no, we got one.
Hang on a minute.
Oh,
is it this one?
Very similar to that.
There's one like that. I can't play it. I can't play it on an acoustic. If I had an electric,
I'd be all over that shit.
There's that one.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Stevie Ray Vaughan was one of them. And Eddie Van Halen, I know we mentioned him, but that the way he approached guitar and built his own guitars, you know, that's, some mad scientist, you know.
He was a massive innovator, wasn't he? I love that he's... he built his own guitar. They're a work of art to look at. They do the new ones, don't they? Like the signature one or that the reproduction. I think they do it in like different levels, and you get like the top one, which looks just like his one with all the dirt on it and everything.
There was one in
you just look at them and it's like, I know it's not his guitar, but even to look at that, it's like, wow, that is so fucking cool.
Well, we went to that DV 24/7 in Germany.
Oh, right,
on the outskirts of Cologne.
Are the music shops are available?
Massive. Well, yeah. None like this. I mean, well, it's the biggest music shop I've ever been.
Biggest one in Europe, Gary said, I think, isn't it?
Well, I can believe that. It was colossal. Mm. But over about five floors, each floor was, on its own, was bigger than any music shop I've been in. But they had one, they had a Kramer replica of the Van Halen guitar. Which, you know, I love the way Eddie Van Halen sort of approached it. It's cut away anything he didn't need, you know. It's like just volume knob.
Bare bones, like.
Like a pickup.
It's
brilliant, you know. Like, because obviously with the Floyd Rose, you know, that system of doing like the dive bombs and everything, like the balance of the guitar and the, you know, to get that set up, it's not easy, you know. I've only ever had one guitar with a Floyd Rose.
Yeah.
Which can incidentally never leave the house, actually.
Fair.
We'll get to that though.
Maybe we'll do a video on that one.
Maybe we'll do a video on that. But I can't be seen in public with that guitar anymore.
For various reasons.
Setting a Floyd Rose up is not easy. So like he obviously like just loved that and got intricate with absolutely every detail in there.
Yes, that's great.
And his guitar, which is he's an innovator in every way, you know, playing and technical.
Yeah.
Eddie Van Halen, amazing.
Rick
Nielsen, Cheap Trick.
Oh my god.
He's got some
what a collection of guitars.
Speaking of like iconic guitars, you know, as silly as they are, some of them, you know.
Well, they're as silly as him, aren't they? They're basically like him in guitar form, aren't they?
Yeah.
Absurd. What's this? Is it the taxi cab one?
Yeah.
He's got. He's got. I'm sure he's got a guitar that is him, isn't he? Has he not got a guitar that's like him, like a model of him?
Yeah.
I'm something like that.
Sounds like him.
He is brilliant.
And the five necks, you know.
Oh, yes. Yeah, with all the necks on it, yeah.
Outrageous.
I'm straying into sort of my personal opinion here because I'm sure they are iconic to some people, but some of the other makes and stuff, the more modern guitar, I suppose maybe if they're modern, they're not been around long enough to be iconic, but they tend to be the Gibsons and Fenders and stuff that are these vintage iconic guitars, aren't they? It seems to be. There's not many sort of other... Not yet, anyway. You know, yeah. The sort of shredder guitars, the sort of seven strings, and
for want of a better word, romantic about Gibsons and Fenders. I don't know, like, because PRS have been around a long time.
Yeah,
Ibanez have been around a long time.
Yeah, I suppose so. Ibanez is one of them companies that, yeah, they are. But they also, I think they do like the classic looking guitars really well. You get some of the 70s Ibanez
V's and stuff,
and like Paul Gilbert's been massive for them, hasn't he, really? He's made them kind of iconic in a lot of ways. The Fireman. Yeah, that's fucking... Yeah. Well, and you know what I'm going to say?
What?
Fucking Kiss.
never even entered my head.
Well, it's the same guitar, but upside down, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it the Iceman?
Iceman, yeah.
He called it the
You could have said System of a Down. You could have.
I don't know anything about System of a Down, I've got to be honest. I wouldn't know if he played a fucking tennis racket or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think Paul Gibbs, I think it looks better.
I
think it looks miles better. Well, I didn't know it wasn't a thing. I thought, oh, that's cool.
There's plenty of videos of him talking about you, and he's like, yeah, it's like you got more access. Because the big appendage is at the top rather than the bottom, so he's like, you sort of press your body against it and it's like
it just makes more sense. Yeah.
But yeah, guitars, I own like copies of Japanese brands that basically copy the work of other American guitar brands.
Some of these companies are amazing, like you say, Bernie and Greco and Tokai, they make some absolutely incredible guitars.
I've got a Tokai, the Tokai Firebird I've got, and that's a guitar that is just like, this is so well made. Other guitars I've got, you know, this like, oh, you can feel like the neck's not perfect, and but that Tokai Firebird is just like, this is really well made. The way it sits on you, the way it feels, the frets, the tuning, it's wicked. And Chris Catalyst, a good friend. He said the same thing. It was sort of sat around backstage somewhere and he was playing it and he was like, how much did you pay for this? And I was like, I think it was about 350 quid something. And he was like, it's a bargain, you know.
Easily
paid a grand or something for that guitar. But it's just because it's wasn't made by Gibson, you know.
Yeah.
Doing myself out of Gibson there. any favours from Gibson here, aren't I?
See you in court, Gibson.
But no, I mean, it's having said that though, recording Triggered, and we borrowed a 58. It was a 2020, I think.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Reissue of a 58 Les Paul. I used it the whole album, pretty much the entire album.
Amazing, that guitar, wasn't it?
Lead, rhythm, everything. Stayed in tune, and I was like giving that back to the shop that we borrowed it from. It was like, that was difficult. it's just finding the right guitar. It's finding the right guitar, and I would have if I had the money, I would have bought that guitar.
Yeah. Well,
it just felt right.
You never know. It's still in existence, isn't it?
Just felt right.
Being somebody's bedroom now, never being played.
In a
5 years' time, it'll wind up back in Promenade being traded for another new one.
Probably.
Sit in someone's bedroom for another 5 years.
Probably, but that's the way it is.
They're beautiful, aren't they? They're at the forefront of rock and guitar music, aren't they, really? And let us know what you think. Let us know what your favourite guitars are. You don't have to play guitar to like guitars. I mean,
yeah,
what's your favourite actual guitar and who plays it? And it's interesting. I love all this stuff. It's interesting to know what people class as iconic guitars.
I'd have to sit and think, really, but I think I've kind of mentioned all the obvious ones that come to the top of my head.
Angus has got to be up there, hasn't he? I mean, I know.
Yeah, well, this is one for Steve, though. I wasn't going to step on his toes when talking about his Lord and Saviour. But Malcolm as well is Gretsch White Falcon, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What was it? Life's in Play? Was that a White Falcon?
No, it was a Free Fee Five.
Free Fee Five, right? Okay. Them Gretsch White Falcons are absolutely colossal things, aren't they? And he was tiny, wasn't he?
He was.
He looks absolutely.
He was only Lal.
But yeah, no. Like and subscribe. Thanks for tuning in once again. Let us know what you think about guitars. Who you love? Which guitars you can't stand? Or which are ugly? Which are sexy? Which ones would you own? I'll try and get back to you.
We appreciate your support.
We do. See you next week.